When it comes to sales, A, nothing is as simple as you thought, and really, nothing is what it appears. You may have come in with some ideas of sales means this, sales means that. Obviously, it's a little more complicated. It's going to get more complicated. We just talked about five steps toward turning a cold call into an appointment. And again, I want to stress, that's what this is about. It's about beginning the professional relationship so that you can go back to it again and again and again. And again, just to stress, cold calls are not about sales, just like sales isn't actually about sales. And just to sort of complete the transformation, when we left for break, I left you with the question, what do you do once you get the appointment? Okay, I've done the hard part, now what? Right? Now, you switch roles again. In the first part of this exercise, when you're working the cold call, you are flat out a salesman. In that, what I mean is, when you are really doing anything when it comes to broadcasting, you're always selling something. You're selling one of three things. You're either selling a product for a client, i.e. cutting a commercial, or you're selling something for the station, doing a break, or talking about a promo, or some other thing, or at the very least, you're selling yourself. And by that I mean, you're making the impression to your business, whoever you work for, that you are worth their time. You are doing something that is advantageous to them, right? You do something for them that no one else can do. Whether it be because nobody else delivers a break the way you do, or nobody else cuts a promo the way you do, or whatever it might be. But you constantly have to prove your worth. By the way, I still deserve to be here, kind of thing. Right? That's always going to be the case. Somebody, a fourth quarter student asked me, last week, said, what was the most frustrating thing about being on the air? The most frustrating thing and the most rewarding thing also about being on the air is you're only as good as your last break. Right? You may have been brilliant last week, but if you just stunk up the joint 5 minutes ago, that's kind of where you're at. Right? So you're constantly, great what you did last week was awesome, but what have you done for me lately? Kind of thing. And in many ways, that's always going to be true no matter what your job is, whether it be being a personality on the air or being a member of the sales team or sometimes a combination of the two. Very often, you'll be doing more than one thing at once, especially in a smaller medium market, which is where most of you are going to start. You're not going to do just one thing. Those days are long gone, right? So let's say that you've been successful in your cold call attempt and you've got the appointment. Well, now you do have to switch roles, and you go from being a salesman, straight-up salesman, trying to impress the client to get the appointment, right? You go from that to now having to do an entirely different job. You go from being a salesman to being a consultant. And consultant's a word that gets thrown around a lot. Some of you may have been consultants or been to see a consultant for one thing or another. Anybody tell me what a consultant actually does? And before you say anything, consults is not a viable option. Yeah. What do they actually do?
Well, you advise them how to do what you're doing a little bit better.
Exactly right. They give you advice on how to do what it is you want to do a little bit better. In other words, they're experts, right? They know more than you about this particular thing, whatever that thing might be. And so that really is what you become for your client. In this case, you become their marketing expert. You become their marketing consultant, okay? Because they may be great at selling shoes or cars or sandwiches or whatever it might be, but they may not know thing one about cutting commercials or how to reach an audience or how to package a message. In fact, very often, when people aren't advertising, it's because nobody bothered to show them how or to tell them why they should. Even though every businessman, and probably most of you guys in this room, you've all heard the expression, takes money to make money, right? What that means is you've got to get the word out. You've got to spend at least something on advertising, whether it be, a guerrilla campaign like we talked about a couple weeks ago, or a full-on media buy. You have to get the word out. And that's what this is about. You go from being a salesman to get the appointment, and once you have it, now your job is different. Now You're there to help your client in whatever way you possibly can, okay? And what I'm going to tell you about are four phases in the consultant process. Some of these we've talked about before, but it never hurts to go back and sort of revisit what you've done. The first step in the consultancy phase is what we call uncovering. And I know that's not really a word, but follow me on this. I'm working a theme. Uncovering. What does that mean? Any ideas? It's okay to say no, because this is all new to me, too. What do you think?
Uncover something?
Yeah. Much like consulting is the act of consulting, uncovering is also the act of uncovering. What does that actually mean, though? Can you describe it maybe a little different way?
No, I can't.
Okay, that's right. Let's see if we can tag and phone a friend, maybe. What do you think? Yeah.
Uncovering what they might be good at or what they might be able to tell good.
Okay, close. We're kind of dancing around it. Uncovery, when you uncover something, it's like you didn't know it was there, right? And then you uncover and go, oh my gosh, it's so obvious, right? So another way to think about this, to put this in terms that we've already talked about, uncovery is actually, in a way, it's prospecting. It's identifying your client. Now, even though you've already done this, to meet with your client in the first place, go back and reevaluate them. Make sure you know what it is you thought you knew about this client. Okay? Because you may have had one impression going in to get the appointment, and now that you've got it, it never hurts to go back and double check your facts. Okay? So that's what uncovery is. Uncovery is identifying the clients you want to work with. Make sure that the ones you're working with are ones you actually want to work with. Also, it doesn't hurt to go back and reevaluate ones, clients that may have said no to you in the past. Find out why. Maybe you can take a little different approach with them. Okay? But uncovery is the first step. The second step is discovery. And this means asking questions. But there's a specific reason why you want to ask questions. And you actually said it earlier, you want to identify whatever you can about your client. You want to identify their strengths and their weaknesses, okay? This means finding out everything you possibly can about your client. Are they who you thought they were? Do they do what you think they did? What are they doing now? Do they have a new product that they're getting ready to roll out? Is there something that they're particularly good at? Is there something they're not particularly good at? Or is there something they're actually bad at? Have they advertised before? If not, why not? Have they done promotions before? If they have, what worked? If they have, what didn't work? If they aren't doing promotions, why not? This can sometimes mean asking uncomfortable questions. Okay? And clients, just like normal people, they're not quite normal people, but anyway, just like normal people, clients don't like to be told when they're bad at something. They don't like it when you point out their faults. But part of this asking questions means you also have to identify problems. And again, this can be uncomfortable, because like I said, nobody wants to be told, sorry, but you're bad at this. Sorry, you're screwing up. You're not doing this very well. Nobody likes it, but it's necessary. Okay? Because otherwise, how do you get better? If nobody bothers to tell you what you're doing wrong, how do you know? Sometimes it's self-evident, sure. Other times, not so much. And so that's really what this is all about, is asking questions so you can identify problems. Now, that's not so you can meet with your client and point and laugh, much as you may want to, right? That's not what this is about. Identifying problems is not the end of the road, because a problem is an opportunity, right? That's marketing 101. Going into business for yourself, right? Entrepreneurship is identifying where there's a problem or a lack of something and filling that gap, meeting that need, okay? The reason why the iPod is so successful is because until somebody invented it, there was no really super portable thing that could carry everything I could possibly want in my pocket. And now there is. But there wasn't before. Before, if I wanted to listen to all the tunes that I like, I had to carry around a big, bulky you know, CD player or, God forbid, cassette player back in the day. And then I had to carry around all the stuff with me, too, so I had another big bag, and I was taking up space on the bus and doing my journey, right? And somebody said, there's got to be a better way to do this. There's got to be an easier way to do this, especially now that everything's digital and you don't actually need the physical thing anymore. There you go. Flash drives are the same way. It's ridiculously easy now to put anything you... I could put my entire life, professionally anyway, on a flash drive with very little trouble. It's a little disheartening, actually. It's a little scary. Because where before you had this huge body of work, right? Now it's reduced down to this little tiny thing. But there it is. And that's just... And it's caught on so well that it's just the way we do things now. Put it on a flash drive. Shoot me a message on Facebook. Right? Google it. So ubiquitous that it's become a verb. Right? These are all problems that were identified from a client or by a client or by a salesperson who was working for a client who said, hey, how come you can't do this? Or why doesn't this exist? Right? So you're kind of doing that same thing, but that all starts with asking the right questions. And again, some of those can be a little bit disheartening. Because again, your clients, not necessarily, especially if they're not necessarily where they want to be, they're not going to actually, in some cases, want to answer those questions. But you have to get answers out of them. Because if you can't identify what those problems are, what do you suppose the next step is?
Solve them.
There you go. Got it in one. Exactly right. Your third step, once you discover what the problems are, you need to recover from those mistakes. So the third step is called recovery. And this is where you answer those questions or solve the problem. This is also, by the way, where you finally start to make a pitch. This is where you get your business plan together, whatever that plan might be. And again, that's reflected in your one-sheeter, right? The general idea of what you have when you walk in. This is where that process finally starts to take shape. Because you've identified what they need, you can tailor your presentation to fit that. This is where you make your presentation. Again, because now you've got information you can actually work with. Before, you had an idea, and that idea may not hold up. Okay, there's an old saying in the military that says, the plan does not survive first engagement with the enemy. Meaning, you can plan for something all you want, but if the reality that you run into is different than what you planned for, you got to adapt on the fly. You can't go with the old plan if the old conditions don't apply. You know, if you thought you were going to meet somebody at, in the middle of summer, you plan for one thing. If it turns out that it's raining that day and you don't show up with the umbrella, who's the idiot?
You are.
Thank you. Exactly right. But my point is, and I won't take that personally, but my point is, you need to adapt to the situation that's at hand. So if that situation changes, you have to change your approach. You can't just bowl through and say, well, I'm going to do what I'm going to do anyway. I'm all for stick-to-itiveness. I'm all for, you know, seeing a plan through, God knows. But if you need to change the plan, don't be afraid to change the plan. There, so many times people have gotten in trouble, specifically in business and in sales, because they did not react fast enough, or in some cases at all, to what the new reality was. Okay? I'm trying to think of a good example of somebody who just did not react. Well, Borders. There we go. Our good friends at Borders Bookshop. Fantastic brick and mortar business. Did tons of business in the 80s and 90s. Were one of the most successful companies on the planet. But they didn't see the e-books coming. And then when they finally did see them, they didn't react fast enough, and they got beat up. They got beat off the punch by Amazon. Right? How many of you guys is anybody using Kindles now, or downloading books, or e-readers, things like that?
My girlfriend has one.
A couple of you are. Yeah, pretty sweet. Right. Hang on a second. I want to talk about this for a minute. Let's talk about why. Stand by. Let's talk about why this is an issue. Because you'll notice that just because Borders closed doesn't mean there aren't still bookstores, right? There are still bookstores. There are still, you know, small local bookstores. Barnes & Noble's still around.
But a lot of that is because they adapted a little faster. They adapted their business model to what the new reality was. You know, they had to deal with Amazon, they have to deal with being online and being available. The problem in many ways with Borders specifically was they were too big and could not change fast enough to react to changes in their market. So they have all these huge stores that they just plain don't need, right? They didn't downsize fast enough. And it's a big shock. I live in Ypsilanti, and I used to go to the Borders in downtown Ann Arbor all the time, which they call Store One, because it was the first store.
Yeah,
and it was enormous. I mean, it was like, you know, two stories. At one point, it was two buildings that were like bridged. And then by the time it was almost over, they were reduced to a third of what their original Store One volume was. It was really kind of sad because you could see where they used to be this great big huge thing with like a coffee shop in it and all that great stuff, you know? But it just changed because they didn't react to changes in the marketplace. You have to do that on a smaller scale when you deal with your clients. If you run into something that you didn't plan for, you got to change the plan to try and meet those new circumstances. What's up?
Well, how did one bookstore change their plan over another's when those like electronic book readers came out? How did one store, you know, do better job than the other?
That all has to do with management. It all has to do with the fact that I'm willing to bet, and I wasn't in the meeting, so I don't know. I'm willing to bet that Borders figured, well, we'll get our e-readers online, and they did eventually. But by then it was too late. People's buying habits had changed, and also, I think that Borders misjudged the impact of Amazon on people's book buying habits. Because now I'll tell you straight up, if I need to buy a book or a DVD, my first instinct is go to Amazon and order it.
Right.
I have to remind myself that I'm allowed to go to a brick and mortar store and go buy something and not just have it delivered to my house. That really is the reality. They were counting on customers who would still do things the old way, when in fact it's just plain more convenient. And if you can get next day shipping and you're willing to pay an extra $10, you know, why wouldn't you? It's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. Some people like going to a store. They like, you know, getting out of the house or whatever and going and interacting with the public. And if that's what you dig, then great. You probably hate Amazon because I don't get to talk to a person, right? And there are some things for which I really like them, that we were talking about comic books earlier. I still go to my local shop because I like the guys who hang out at the local shop, right? You have a favorite garage. It's because you probably not only did they do a good job for you, but you like the people who were there. Now, a garage is a little different story because it's not like you can't, you know, send your car off and have it fixed and then they ship it back to you. It doesn't quite work that way. But you get the idea. There is something to be said for, I like the experience that I get from a certain place. So the answer to your question is, again, Barnes & Noble rolled out their e-reader faster and they got more of their content online faster than Borders did. And perception is everything. How many of you, we talked about iPods earlier. How many of you guys own Zooms?
It is an
MP3 player. But here's the thing. The reason why hardly anybody has a Zoom is because it was second.
Didn't it not work with
it? It came out second. The iPod was first, and everybody went, iPod. Ooh, right? The Zoom does the same thing, right? And so, it did some things better. But because it came out second, nobody cares.
Yeah.
You care. The lone Zoom user in the room, right? and not a slam on Zoom. It's an MP3 player. That's what it is. But there's no denying that the Zoom is sort of the redhead stepchild of the MP3 player community.
Yeah, kid.
Sorry. Now, in many ways, think about it another way. Think about iPhones versus Droids, right? Androids. That's a little bit different story, because there you're talking about brand loyalty again. Because some people really like the way that Androids are laid out and the way they work. Some people love Apple. Usually if somebody loves Apple, they really love Apple, right? They're like an Apple zombie. Must have iPad, right? Must have new thing come out next month. Right, month wait for things. Steve says buy things. Some people, and that's we talked about branding a few weeks ago. There's your classic example right there. Apple fans are Apple fans are Apple fans and will be for life. Right. But where the Android makes its money is, just like there are people who absolutely love Apple, there are also people who are like, get that thing away from me. I don't want anything to do with Apple just because they creep me out. Right? Because now it's like this weird techno cult kind of thing. So the Android makes its money and makes its mark by being different, even though it's kind of, they do the same thing. And Android and iPhone, very similar. But they've got some very important differences depending on what you want to do. So again, this is all about identifying problems and solving them, okay? And the reason, hopefully you can see through some of those examples, this is why this is crucial. Because if you can do this well and do it quick, you make the difference for your client between a successful campaign and one that doesn't work. And if you line up too many campaigns that don't work, pretty soon, they're not gonna pick up the phone anymore because things aren't working. So this step, where you actually make your presentation and answer those questions, solve those problems, that's actually crucial. This is where stuff gets serious. Up until then, it's all theory. But now you have to start making decisions. And this means working with the client, which is not always easy. We have this saying that the customer is always right. Not always. Sometimes clients know exactly what they want. And the bottom line for a lot of managers, if you do get into sales and your sales manager is going to say, did they write a check? The answer is yes. They'll say, thank you very much. Okay, we made a sale, right? But sometimes clients want you to do things that are just plain a bad idea. And every once in a while, you got to step up and go, okay, look, boss, I'm really sorry to be the one to tell you this, but I don't think that's a good idea. Now, if you've done that and they say, I know, I appreciate how you feel, but we want to do this. Okay, fine. You go through with it, it doesn't work, then you can say, okay, let's try this again, right? And the classic example of this is coming from where I come from in terms of making commercials and stuff is clients who make their own commercials. It's a horrible idea for 90% of them. Most of them should not be making their own commercials. Sometimes it's cute, sometimes it's funny. How many of you guys remember Mel Farr? That's right, Mel Farr superstar, right? Here's a guy who made these awful commercials, and they were bad.
But they were awesome.
Like Mel in his suit with the cape flying around Detroit. You're laughing, but it's true. There are probably some people in this room who are like, that did not happen.
Absolutely. It was horrible, but it was
right.
At the same time.
Now, that's the kind of thing where those were just so ridiculous that it kind of became funny, and it became, oh, yeah, there's Mel, there's the new thing, right? But I got to be honest, if you'd come to me and said, hey, I know, let's put Mel on a cape. What? That's ridiculous.
Super car salesman.
Right, exactly right. Exactly right. What do you think?
Same kind of thing happened with, I think it was Hanson Windows. When the guy first came on TV, he was really aggressive, and he was like, buy my windows.
Yeah,
and
right.
And everybody was like, whoa, and they didn't want to go to him. Mm-hmm. And then the next, they obviously were suffering because they weren't getting a lot of business. So then he comes out the next commercial, and he's playing guitar with a bunch of kindergartners.
Right, exactly right.
Switching up the entire...
And now, and they've got that little jingle that they always play, right? And you're exactly right. This is, again, a classic example of trying something and, whoa, okay, that doesn't matter. Right? All right. So, again, meeting your client's needs is what it's all about. Even if that means sometimes pointing out to them what they don't do well. Now, I gotta emphasize, this is pretty sensitive. Because just like nobody likes to be told they're wrong or that they don't do something well, a lot of clients, you got to be careful how you present the information to them. You can't say, I'm sorry, Bill, but that's just the worst idea ever. And you're an idiot. You can't say it that way. You know, you have to sort of make your case and build your case with, I don't know, evidence and logic, God forbid.
Just tell them, like, you're paying me for a reason. This is the reason.
Well, that can work, and some clients will know. like the example I keep coming back to is some guys are really, you know, car salesmen are pretty good at selling cars. Maybe not great at making commercials. A lot of clients will say, look, I paid you for this, you do this. You don't tell me how to sell cars, I won't tell you how to make commercials. But in some ways, especially in small markets, really successful business people are the kings of their own, they're the kings of their own land, right? And it's very hard to say, I'm sorry, but the emperor has no clothes. Mm-hmm. Even if they don't. It's not always easy, but occasionally it does. You do need to say, look, that's just a bad idea. If you're lucky and you've done a good job for your station in the past, then management will back you up. And that's happened to me a couple times. There have been exactly two times that I've had to say to a client, to their face, I cannot do what you want because what you want will not work. Not only either because it's technically not possible, or it'll just end up in a bad commercial and I'm not going to do it. Both times I was fortunate enough to have management back me up, but I had to have reasons for it, not just, I think this is a bad idea, but here's why.
So did they change their plan?
They did, but only after my boss got involved and said, look, this is a bad idea. In that case, I did have to call up the chain of command and say, listen, I need someone who's heavier than me. I need my boss to come in and say.
Yeah.
And in that case, you know, that's somebody who can say, look, I've been in this business 20 years. Trust me when I tell you, you don't want to do this. It's different coming from them than it would have been coming from me, who at that point was a couple years out of school.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit older. I wasn't 20 years old, but they still were like, well, what do you know? Mm-hmm. So it can be difficult, but if you do have to do it, sometimes it can work out in your favor. Now again, 90% of the time, your client wants what they want, and they'll get what they want, and they'll write a check, and they'll be happy. But occasionally, you may have to say to your client, "I'm sorry, but that's just a bad idea." And every once in a while, you know, big blunders can be saved if somebody had said, "You shouldn't do this." You know. I think maybe Rush Limbaugh should have had an editor last week. Because you can't tell him no, because he's the boss, right? He's paying for it now. We'll see what happens next week.
Nothing's going to happen.
Oh, you say that, but he's already lost a ton of money. Curious to see what happens. Anyway,
yeah. I'm pretty sure he can stand to lose.
A lot of people not for too long. Him, though. A lot of
they did the same thing with Imus, and you see where he ended up.
Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah. He's not financially gone.
Well, maybe Keith still has his money, but he's not on the air.
I just in the morning.
All right, moving on.
Radio.
Almost done. We've gone through three steps. There's one more to go.
Cash check.
The final step is sounds a little bit ominous, but it's actually not as scary as you think. The final step in the consultant process is conversion.
Ooh.
I know. Ooh. Right?
Well, I know what that is. The act of converting.
The act of converting. I knew it. Yeah, exactly right. Just like uncovery is the act of uncovering, and discovery is the act of discovering, and recovery is the act of recovering. Well played, sir. Conversion in this case means this is where you finally, and I can't emphasize this enough, this is where you finally start talking contracts and money. This is where you finally put stuff down on paper. Conversion is where the actual deal making takes place. Okay, you're finally going to commit to, we're going to run X number of spots. They're going to be X long. They're going to run for so many weeks. We've agreed on what the copy is going to be. We've agreed on what the voices are going to be. All that kind of thing. We've agreed on the shots we're going to use, whatever. Once you've worked out the details in phase three, then it's not until phase four where you actually bring money into the equation and stuff finally gets written down and commitments finally get made. It's not until then, right? So it's the very last step in this four-step process, which, by the way, comes after the five-step process that we talked about in the first place. So money doesn't actually enter into this equation until way down here. Okay? So it is literally the last thing you think about. It's the last thing that needs to happen. Because money complicates things. Once money gets involved, now it's real.
Okay? So it's best to leave that to the end so you can make sure you get all your details in place before you commit. And the reason I say that is because this is, I mean, honestly, we're talking about money, and money's important. Okay? But if you don't have all these details set up before the money starts to get into the picture, then things are going to be a little too fuzzy. Right? And that's where miscommunication happens. What's funny about this business is I keep saying what sales isn't about or what sales is actually about. Sales is about relationships. Sales is also about communication on a very real level. In fact, that's what all this is about, is about communication. It's about trying to get the message that you want out to your audience. And that's not as easy as it sounds because everybody's got a slightly different filter. Okay? You can control the message you put out, but you're not always in control of how it gets received. And there can be a million different reasons why that misperception is the case. Let's talk about, for example, Beaner's Coffee. Not Beaner's, Big B's now. See what I did there? Big B's is a Michigan company that's been around for about 10 years. It's a coffee company, local coffee company. They didn't used to be called Big B's. They used to be called Beaner's, and that worked okay when they were in a couple of towns in Michigan. But when they started to expand and go all over the state and dip down into Ohio, somebody finally tapped them on the shoulder and said, hey, by the way, stand by, folks. Thank you. Somebody finally tapped them on the shoulder and said, you may not want to be called Beaner's because I don't think that means what you think it means.
Beaner?
Yeah. Oh. When you think of, when they were thinking of it, they thought, oh, coffee beans, duh.
Yeah.
Naturally, it's a coffee shop. What do we have? We have beans. Ergo, we are Beaner's. But there is a slightly derogatory meaning to that phrase. If you don't know it, it's not my job to explain it to you. But nonetheless, that was affecting their message because it was a connotation that they were, I'm assuming, previously unaware of. And so finally somebody said to them, yeah, you're going to need to change that. Which is why they became, that's why they became Big B's. Is because somebody finally said, yeah, that's flat out racist. You're going to want to change that. And they went, really? We had no idea. Probably because I'm willing to bet they legitimately had no idea what they were saying. Clearly, they were not fans of Carlos Mencia. But anymore, right? I know. Talk about crash and burn, right?
Wow. Mencia, grand total like 3 episodes.
Yeah. Anyway, so again, it's about managing expectations. It's about trying to control your message. That's actually what all of this leads up to. So, again, look at the 5-step process to turn a cold call into an appointment. Realize that's what it's about. And then, once you've got the appointment, how do you turn it from just another meeting into actual money? That's what happens at the very end of that process. Okay? Now, next week, we're going to take everything that we've talked about from today and last week when we first started talking about sales, and we're going to integrate everything back into the promotions picture. Because for the last couple of weeks we've been talking almost exclusively about sales. Well, now we're going to take a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B, and we're going to fuse everything back together so you can see the way that sales and promotions work together. Because next week we're going to talk about your final project, which is going to be putting together what we call a sale promotion. It is a group project. We will also review for the final exam next week, so be prepared for that, because believe it or not, even though we just got done with the midterm, the final is coming as well. So next week is important. Okay? Now, I know I've covered a ton of stuff. Do you have any questions about anything that we've talked about today? I will take your silence. Okay. Thank you very much.